It's the Rock Show with Gully and Joe. I'm Gully, Joe's with me. It's a little bit of a short show this week. We're just basically going to introduce the interviews that we've done because we've got a bit of a backlog of interviews, and that's pretty much it for this week. The interviews are fairly long, so you'll get a good hour out of us at the very least, I would say, Joe.
Oh, yeah, it'll be quality rather than quantity this week, I'm afraid, but it's two very good interviews. We'll chuck a couple of tunes in there as well. So, yeah, you'll get your fix. And, we had a bit of a problem with the podcast this week, and both mine and Gully's schedules ramo this week. So these interviews were too good to sit on, though. So we're just rushing them out now. And, so have a listen. And we've got loads of stuff coming up as well. This is another reason why we couldn't sit on it, because we will end up with a massive backlog. We've got some really exciting things coming up in the next couple of weeks. So, yeah, on to you, Gully.
So the first one we've got an interview. It's Dan with the Ritual Festival. If you've not heard of the Ritual Festival, it's a black metal, death metal festival in Leeds, and that's happening in April. So really cool guy. He makes some cool requests for music as well. So if you're into your death and black metal and you're up to north of the UK, then go and get some tickets. Go and support these little festivals, because the little festivals grow into big ones, and we want to support these people. So they got Ashon, is that, I can't even say his fucking name, to be honest. A few other bands as well. Then there's a few other on it as well. So if you like them, check out this interview. Good interview, top bloke, have a listen. It's the Rock Show with Gully and Joe, and I'm talking to Dan, who is the organizer of the Ritual Festival in Leeds. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you doing? You all right?
Not too bad. So, for the uninitiated, tell everybody what the Ritual Festival is and what's going on this year.
So, Ritual Festival started last year, and we had Grey, Full of Hell, The Body, Conan, 40 Watt Sun, and it's in a nice venue called Canal Mills, which is primarily like a rave venue. They've got a good PA system there, it's a good layout. So, it went well last year, so we're doing it again this year. So, we've got Issan, All Pigs Must Die, Misery Index, and now Anthrax. The reunion of Canvas, Bosk, and loads of really good upcoming UK bands.
How did it come about? Because like, it's really, really hard to get, especially with metal and this kind of heavier side, shall we say, the darker side of metal. How did you get the idea? How did it come about in the first place then, last year?
I've been around sort of seeing working at festivals and gigs and with other promoters for quite a while, and it was more of a case of I wanted to make my stamp on doing my own festival. And it was basically my own music taste. And there was a bit of a niche in the rockets. There wasn't that much of this around at that time. So I just went for it, and I just approached bands and just started booking it. And that's just pretty much how it started.
First one that you done last year, after it was all said and done, how's it go?
Everyone loved it. I think the only bad feedback I got was there wasn't coffee, and it was too far of a walk away from the town centre. So if that's the only bad feedback I have, then... yeah, all good. It put me a bit I learned a lot from it. It was a bit, I jumped in the deep end trying to do that, and I've jumped in the deep end again this year trying to do it. But I think eventually it'll all pan out, and I'll eventually keep going.
Well, that's the thing, because if you think like Bloodstock, where that started and where that is now, because I covered that last year for the show, and the type of bands they're getting playing, Megadeth are going to play there this year. If you think about where they came from, they started off small, and you know, if you find a niche and you have that kind of family orientated kind of gig going on, because that's what Bloodstock's got going on, then you're golden. And this looks to be quite a niche thing. Some of the bands you've got on, we've spoken to some of the bands who are actually on the bill, funnily enough. Tell us a little bit about them and what made you get them on board.
I've seen Issan a couple of times now, and it was the last time we was at Bloodstock was sort of my maturity from the cover black metal I listened to metal into evolving into liking proggy technical death metal sort of stuff. So his direction going more towards that side of the way, I was really keen towards, and I really enjoyed that. So it's simple as just applying, just sending an email and getting him. And then the rest, All Pigs, I missed out on them last year. And obviously there's key members from Converge in there. So that was obviously one I wanted to get. Misery Index haven't been over in the UK for absolute time. And loads of me and my mates are absolutely massively fans. So it's just a case of I've got a list of bands that I want to book, and I just apply and I ask for them and see if we can get them. And that's how it works, really. just when I'm booking bands.
Yeah, big fans of some of the bands on the bill. Would you like to pick a couple of tracks for us to play from some of the bands on the bill, and we'll play that on the show for you?
Yep, so Isan, one of my favourite ones is Mass Darkness, and now Nathrak will have Aggression of the Mean. We'll be right back.
what's the metal scene like in Leeds? Because it in London it's big, but you've got to look for it. So what's it like in Leeds?
Leeds is pretty much always something going on near enough every day. But it's not, it isn't your standard long hair, leather jacket, metal crowd. There's a lot of experimentation, a lot of new stuff coming through, very DIY, grind. You'll have guys that are in like indie bands, but they're also in bands, they're like Athlete Gentlemen and they're in grind bands. So a lot of people, it's more about the music culture around here, the actual creation of music. There's literally always gigs on. There's at least sort of five or six venues that are constantly putting gigs on. It's just more the case of, it's very DIY and very, very small and close-knit community. Whereas like Manchester's got a really good sort of city-wide scene, and it can do like big like death metal shows and big power metal shows. But they wouldn't really work in Leeds because Leeds is very like undergroundy, trendy in a way. But I'm saying trendy is in it's more sort of up to date like, all the time. It doesn't rely on nostalgia at all. It's always up to date with its scene.
I miss that kind of a scene from my native place, Liverpool, because it was more an underground even way back when I was still about there. It was a nice feeling where London, it is a bit more mainstream, and that's one thing I can say about living in the capital of the UK. You're always within a day of a big band coming to play here, and it's harder to get places out of the big cities where you can get gigs like what you're putting on. So it's good that you're doing it and, you know, flying the flag for different genres of metal, because it's so hard to get packages with lots of these bands to come over to the UK. It really is.
Yeah, like you're trying to get bands to come over to the UK. Like, it just costs so much more, because for them to make it worthwhile for them, it just costs more. So then to do it in the UK, you have to do sort of a 3 or 4 dates, so like London, either Manchester or Leeds or Glasgow or something like that. So the smaller cities and the smaller towns miss out. So you are really lucky if you live in a big city, because you'll get all the shows, but then you'll end up spending all your money going to all the gigs or having to miss them, whereas everyone else has to get in a car and travel a couple hours to see these really, really big packages.
Yeah, you've got to make it special for the fans to get off their arse and come and see it, and you've got like a really strong lineup for this year as well. So where do your influences lie? What started you off with metal? Where did you begin?
So my mum was a glam rocker, and then my stepdad was a bit of a thrashy hair metal kind of guy. And then I sort of just got brought up around that. It's all the classics. So Faith No More and Metallica and all that sort of stuff. And then evolved through basically being... when Slipknot Hoodies and Linkin Park got a bit bigger, then I sort of evolved into the new metal scene. And then my own sort of taste evolved from there until I met a bunch of mates from where I used to live in Bolsover, who introduced me to the more extremer side of stuff, so the black metal and the proper death metal and stuff like that. So it's a case of people have influenced me, and then I've taken on board what they've shown me and then decided what I've liked, and then just sort of explored it myself a little bit that way.
It's always the way that everyone starts off on the lighter side. I start off Guns N' Roses, and funny, I'm still going to go and see them this year, but then you naturally progress. You hear someone or playing something, or you'll be at a gig and the support act will be really heavy, and you just go from there. It is a natural evolution. So you've got you're a big supporter by the looks of it, giving bands a leg up, and we've got a thing with our show is that we send us an MP3, that's cool, we'll play the MP3 once for you, but if you send us a CD, we'll play it for a whole month, and we want to support the underground, because I've been in bands, I'm in a band now, and it's so hard to get anywhere, it's so hard to do anything, and we like giving the one up to people and giving them that leg up, because it's getting really hard to get out there, because it's not just playing to your local area anymore. The internet has made, like, anyone can record shit and put it on there now, so it's getting so much harder to get a leg up, I think.
Yeah, the internet is a double-edged sword. It seems very easy on paper, to even as a promoter, to just put an event out there, get your artwork, and just invite those people, but you need to get that strength of good content behind you and actually be worthwhile. Like, the amount of bands I have that messaging me for ritual shows, and I try my hardest to reply to all of them, but simply, some bands won't read what Ritual does, or they don't understand quite what I do, or they'll just be looking for a show. But as long as you reply to them and tell them what's happening, majority of the time I'll tell them that I'll book a band that I've seen. So that's majority. If you need a support slot, if I need a support slot, I'll be at other gigs watching other bands, and that's how I choose my support slots. So if you notice from the shows from like my first year, there's bands that were on those sort of shows or on other shows I've done are now on Ritual, or they'll be on Dreadfest, because I've put them on once on a normal show to see that if I liked them and see if they suit with that lineup, and then they'll be on another show because I like them. And that's literally how I book bands, is if I see you play live and I like it, I'll book you. It's that literally that easy.
It's good that though, because you have it in other festivals where like bands who've been on say a couple of years are on one of the lower stages, and then like as they progress, you'll find them move up, and it's good to have that natural evolution of the band. And you know, if you like it, play it. I'm like you. If we like stuff, we play it. And it is good to have that, and it is good to see that you're supporting new acts, because let's be honest, it is getting harder and harder to do anything, and it's a tough industry, like especially metal, which let's be honest, it's the 90s on here anymore. It's never going to be as big as it was then, and it may come back, but it's never going to reach them heights. So everyone needs a helping hand, and it's good that like you and people like us are here to give it a kick up the arse, basically.
I think the music industry in general, it's healthier now because people are choosing what they consume. So it's going to be hard for a while for everyone to sort of earn their keep, and they're in their own little genres and their own little areas. But as soon as the talent shows through and who's good is good, they'll just be that it'll be better for everyone, I think, eventually. It's just that everyone's going to work hard, and we're all saturated the market at the moment a bit, but everyone will shine through what is actually good.
I think we've got to work out as well. We've got to work out how people are going to earn money off it, because it's so hard to do that now. You're like, we've spoken to one band where they said they're basically just like a walking T-shirt shop, because that's what they do to make the money. And you don't make money from the music anymore. Streaming's taken over the world, and it's got to be monetized better. And the record companies have got to, you know, pull their finger out and help the bands out, because it should just be about the music earning you the money, and the gigs should just be a bonus. I think that's slightly old school of me, but no one wants to have to rely on whether they'll break even of a gig by how many T-shirts they sell. It shouldn't come down to that, really, and it's sad that it has.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of stories of bands basically making all their money off merch and making money through just like certain crowdfunding stuff, and just, but I think it has shifted, it has changed completely, and the reason for this is basically the internet's changed absolutely everything. And I think the reason why people are struggling to make money is because people are choosing what they consume now. So there's always a proper like try before you buy ethic. So but beforehand you're like, oh, what's this, honest, this band, you listen to one song if you're lucky at the HMV with the headphones on your head and go, oh, I like this. But now you can stream the whole thing or download it illegally and have it all, and if you like it, you might go and buy a t-shirt, or you might buy a limited edition vinyl. I think that's the way it's going to go. I think people are going to try before they buy. If they like it, they'll go and buy something else, because I think it's the same with like TV shows. I think like Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, they make all their money off merchandise. They don't make barely any. Like HBO fund and whoever else funds Walking Dead funds those programs to get made and pays everyone, but they make all the money off merchandise and publishing rights. I just think that's how it's going to have to shift now the internet's came around.
Yeah, it has changed, and some of it's good, some of it's not, because we've spoken to like all sorts, like over the past year we've spoken to like Blaze Bailey, who was like he was an Iron Maiden, you know, he agrees with us that it's changed. Everyone can see the change. It just seems to be the record companies haven't quite got their head around it, and it is slow for the, especially the main ones, to move. It's like turning a massive ship, I think, but everyone's kind of playing catch up right now, and a lot of people are unable to make a living, and a lot of bands are basically hitting the shitter because of it, and it's sad where we're at. We're kind of in limbo, I would guess, at the moment. People just need to find a way.
Yeah, I think the bonus of sort of more the extremely hardest dark side of my area is a lot of people treat it as a really fun hobby, so no one really expects to make money. So as long as they can continue to tour, so they'll be accepting fees that are literally just petrol money, a bed and food, just so they continue touring. And that's like, it is a bit of a bonus of my side of it, is people are generally happy just to continue touring. That's why a lot of DIY gigs will work on donations, like the whole Noise Collective in Hull literally run their shows non-ticket prices, but on donations on the door, because everyone accepts that's what the scene is like. No one, you know, you can't guarantee that 50 people can come to a show, but if you tell a band, we'll put a good show on, so some people will turn up, you'll get fed, you'll have a bed, and we have a good night and some beers, and you'll get whatever's on the door, we're happy to do that. So it's a benefit, I think, of people understanding that there's not money to be made at this level. It just makes everyone not worry about it, and they just have fun where they can then.
Yeah, that's true, because we recently done a radio show, me and Joe, the co-host, who's doing a day job, so he's not back home to do the interview. We were doing a radio show, and we had to call it a day because we've got to work. I work shifts, he works shifts, and we were doing a radio show for free. We do the podcast for free. Everything we do for free is because we love the music, and we're not going to stop doing it. We'll put our own money and time into it, because we love it, and that's the power of the actual genre itself. There's more loyalty to metal and black metal, death metal, whatever you're into in the whole genre. There's a lot more loyalty from fans and people who are just interested in keeping the music going, so than any other music I've found, and that's what's keeping it alive for a lot of people, the fact that we love it.
Yeah, it's just a really expensive hobby.
Yeah, it isn't cheap. So last bit of info, where can we find tickets and dates and everything we need to know?
So we've got the ritual pre-show with Akkok, Infernal Sea and Sathamel. That's on 7th of April, Friday, at Belgrave in Leeds. Tickets available at dice.fm and ritualfestival.bigcartel.com. And then there's a ritual festival itself on Saturday the 8th at Canal Mills in Leeds. And tickets again are at dice.fm and ritualfestival.bigcartel.com, and also at Crash and Jumbo Records in Leeds.
Dan, thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
And we're back. That was the interview with Dan from the Ritual Festival. You had a chat to Ross Dolan, didn't you, Joe?
Yeah. Interviews like this is why I started podcasting and doing journalism in the... that's journalism. Yeah.
yeah, you're journal.
So I could do, interviews like this. Immolation's one of my favourite bands. It was an absolute honour to sit and chat with Ross. He's so down to earth, so funny, so humble. He was just a regular guy. He was snowed under with all the blizzard that happened in New York at the time. And I had a really good chat with him. I really went in depth. And, as an Immolation fan, I tried to get in as many questions as possible. I threw a few curveballs, I like to think. And he was great. So also, check out the new album if you haven't already. I'm sure if you're an Immolation fan, I can't see why you wouldn't have heard it by now. But it's a perfect album. And yeah, this is a great interview. So I'm really happy to have this on the show. So here it is. It's the Rock Show with Gully and Joe. And today I'm joined by Ross Dolan of Immolation. Ross, how are you, man?
Good. How are you guys doing? Good to be here.
Excellent. So, how central to New York are you? Are you on the outskirts of it? Are you hit by this blizzard?
Yeah, actually, I'm upstate now, but I'm originally from Yonkers, which is about 15 minutes from Manhattan. I used to work in the city, so I was very close. So now I'm 5 hours north. I'm closer to Buffalo. I'm in Rochester, New York. So right now we're getting pounded. It's been snowing since last night. So nobody left the house today. Needless to say, we're just housebound today. So that's all right. You know, I get a chance to kind of get these interviews done and get some make up some lost sleep on the tour we just finished. So it's good to have a day, you know.
It's funny because in America you get like waist deep in snow and you get those big tractors that just plow it out of the way. And yet in England we get like an inch of snow and the whole world stops.
Yeah, we were in Dublin one time in Ireland, and they had about an inch, like a dusting. It was like nothing, and man, the whole city shut down. It was like snowpocalypse.
we get it hit pretty hard every couple of years, but none of the councils ever invest in the equipment to clear the snow because they say it doesn't happen often enough. With you guys, it might happen once a year or once every 2 years, so it's all there waiting. But anyway. Death metal.
death metal. That's right.
New album Atonement. I've been meaning to get Immolation on the show for a long time. I'm a massive Immolation fan. And
awesome. Thanks, man. Thank you.
And this album is just it's just perfect. It is the I say in my review, if it's a bit early to be calling album of the year, but the fact that if I hear an album better than this, I'm very excited. The bar has been set very effing high, and we've got Suffocation releasing an album, we've got Morbid Angel releasing an album, Obituary have got one out next week. So there's stuff coming upon the horizon, but like I say, you have raised that bar very high.
Thank you.
How do you keep doing it?
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I mean, the response has been overwhelmingly positive, which is, kind of mind-blowing for us. So, I really appreciate it, man. Thank you. I don't know. I mean, this album, I think what allowed us to make this album what it was the fact that we had extra time, and I think that's the only thing that I could think of that was really different from this one to the past releases. I mean, typically, and I've said this before, maybe 5 months from start to finish, from the time we start writing a record to the time we're out of the studio and it's recorded. With this one, it was over about a year and a half, because we started the process in early 2015. And we had every, hope of having it out by the end of 2015. But, we had some challenges along the way. Bob hit a bout of writer's block midway through the process and had to kind of step away from new music for a while. And our drummer broke his ankle and had to have surgery and like 6 months of rehab. So I think all of this combined really, set us way back in our timing. So we had more time to kind of really work with the material and absorb the songs, understand the music. Steve, our drummer, had a lot more time to kind of really understand the songs again and to articulate his parts a lot better. And, I think all of that extra time really played into what made this album, as good as it is, at least, in the fans' point of view. I mean, we enjoy the record. We think it's a good record. It's a very diverse record. It's kind of, musically, it touches on, I think, every aspect of Immolation from the beginning, and every song kind of has all those different, elements, which is very unique for us, and I think production-wise, the fact that Zach Oren had more time to work on the material, I think he really got us a production that we were looking for with the last record that we didn't really quite achieve, So, moving forward, we addressed a lot of those issues from the last record, and I think he nailed it. I mean, I think the production, the sound on this one is a lot. It's a well-produced album without being overproduced. So it has its moments where, all the instruments have room to breathe and to shine. It still has that atmosphere, and I think it works really well. The drums sound more natural on this record, which is kind of, what we wanted to address with this one, one of the main things we wanted to address. And I think lyrically, it's probably one of our best efforts. We spent a lot of time on the lyrics, a lot of time trying to articulate some of those ideas, that are on the record. And I think musically, Bob, I think, knocked it out of the park. I think he really killed it with this one, and we're all happy with it, So it's nice to see that, translate on the other end, that the fans really, really have latched on to it, really appreciate it. The press has really been very, fond of it. So, yeah, I mean, I can't really ask for anything more than, what we've gotten so far. It's been an absolute, overwhelming experience for us. It's almost like alternate universe Immolation. Like, wow, everybody really likes it. Something must be wrong,
Well, it's, I think it's generally said with Immolation, the first three or the first four albums is the classic material. But I really think that Majesty and Decay was the later day masterpiece. I mean, one of the most consistent bands there is. And even like I said about Kingdom of Conspiracy, I didn't quite like that album as much as Majesty of Decay.
Sure, sure.
And Decay, sorry. But the main problem was is that it followed.
Sure.
Like when a band put out a classic
sure,
album.
Sure, sure, sure. I get that.
But I said, yeah, and I said, but then saying that, I'd love to put out an album as good as Immolation's Worst. the bar was still pretty high with it. It's not as bad by any stretch, but I think Atone matched Kingdom of Conspiracy. And so that's your two later days masterpieces. But this really seems like it's immolation's time, because you've always kind of been... You've always had respect from your peers, because I've seen Alex Webster say that Immolation is his favourite band. I've had Carl from Nile on the podcast previously, and he spoke... We just sat there talking about Immolation for about 5 minutes. He's saying about they know what they're doing. He said they just understand death metal. And he went, whenever I'm lost for ideas or need a bit of information, I mean, I always put on an Immolation CD.
Wow, that's cool. That's so cool to hear that, you know, especially from guys that we know and respect and love their bands as well. So it's kind of cool to kind of get that, you know, that feedback from like guys who we absolutely respect, you know, not only as musicians, but as people too. They're good people. I mean, we're friends. We've known these guys for years and we have a lot of respect for them. So I think to me, that's like the ultimate compliment, to kind of get that kind of respect from your peers. So that's awesome to hear.
Yeah. So it's like Immolation has been the most successful of bands, but they've always been the most respected of bands. And there's a respect there when Mick Thompson of Slipknot has got a tattoo of your artwork.
Yeah, he's got crazy, man.
There's a certain type of respect that bands get that all the success in the world can't buy. And it's, I mean, you're on the front pages of magazines at the moment, and not saying you never would have deserved that, but I couldn't see that happening 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So it seems like the world's finally woken up and gone, hold on a minute, this band had the winning formula all along. And is that have you seen a difference in reception of this album?
Yes, I have. And it's funny you're mentioning all this, because, and that's kind of what I mean, it's like alternate universe Immolation, because we've always been there. We've always done our best. We've always, you know, had the respect of our peers and our fans. I mean, our fans have always been, they're the ones that keep it going. Ultimately, you know, they're the ones who stay with us, you know, but we've always been there. And now it just seems like, you're right, almost like people are like, hey, these guys, you know, these guys have existed for this long. How have I not heard of them before? And I've gotten a lot of that on this last tour. I've gotten so many people come up to us at the merch table or just, you know, in the crowd when we're walking around saying, hey, man, I really enjoyed your set tonight. I can't believe I've never heard of you guys in 30 years. And, you know, I'm a fan now, and I'll have the new CD and I'll have a shirt. So, hey, man, that's what it's about, man. It's you know, better late than never, you know, and we never ever looked at it in those terms. You know, we always had fun doing what we were doing, and we always just tried to be honest about what we did and try to create the best music with each release, you know, and that's all you can really do. We have no control over anything else. You know what I'm saying? The one thing we do have control over, we try to do as best as we can, you know, and everything else, you know, kind of, I guess, falls into place, you know, at the right time. So maybe this is the right time for all that, you know. I don't know. it's not my place to say, you know, other than I'm just glad that, you know, people are really enjoying the new record, and I'm glad we're getting a little bit of notoriety, if or whatever you want to call it, you know, for this one. And yeah, it feels good. It feels nice to be, you know, to be noticed, you know what I'm saying? And to be respected, you know, it's cool. It doesn't change anything. I mean, it's just kind of nice to get that recognition, I guess, for a change, you know? So I'll take it, you know, slow and steady wins the race, they say, right?
Exactly that. Yeah, this the tortoise in the hare or the slow burn yeah, whatever you want to call it. So, something's worked out. Yeah, so... there's always been with Immolation as well, just with this new album, is you could probably find maybe a sonically or a more brutally heavier album, but you're not going to find a heavier album when it comes to atmosphere, and that's, I feel, a lot of bands forget nowadays.
Yeah.
There's a darkness on this album, well, on all the albums,
sure.
Really. There's like an impending doom. I don't know how to describe it, but when you hear it, you know it. So,
well, you're right, and that's kind of, I guess, the only way to describe it. And I know exactly what you're talking about, and just how Bob creates these songs. You know, he creates that, you know, that sense of, wow, so, something's coming and it's not good, you know. And you're right, it is. They are very dark, and we've always we've always believed that this music should be more about feeling rather than, you know, everything else. You know, a lot of bands focus more on the extreme speed, or, you know, the extreme heaviness, the slow, very slow, heavy, dirgy, you know, stuff, or whatever. And we always felt that you need a combination of all of that, but more importantly, you need the feeling, and you need that dark atmosphere, that dark feeling, because that to me is what this music has always been about. It's always been about feeling, and that's kind of what set this music apart from every other genre of music, you know, especially coming off of the later thrash years, when thrash got kind of happy and kind of, you know, corny and stuff like that. I think
got a bit comic booky.
Yeah, you know, and I was, you know, listen, and it's fun and all that, but, you know, I always really wanted my music to be serious and dark and to have a message, you know, and, you know, it was always something that I really looked for in music, and I was always more attracted to the darker music, because that to me was always the stuff that had the most feeling, you know, stuff that was honest and, you know, about real things, you know, things that were dark and things that meant something, you know, and that to me is the darkest. And I think, you know, we've always tried to, you know, incorporate that, infuse that into our music. Always. It's always been the most important part. And I think maybe that's one of the things that I think people recognize now, is that it's always something we've been trying to do. And with this record, speak of songs, and I guess topically, you know, what we're singing about, what the lyrics are about, it all just kind of worked. It was like the perfect storm for this record, and it's exactly what we were shooting for, you know, as far as, like, you know, trying to get something out there that was dark and had that feeling and really was relevant to the times we live in. And I think this record is probably the closest we've ever gotten to that, you know. And there's never going to be any perfection, I could tell you that right now. We're never going to have an album that's going to completely make that mark. But that's the fun part. That's the challenge. You know, it's each time you go around, you try to get a little bit closer. So at least with this record, I feel we've gotten as close as we've ever gotten to that mark, you know. So, and that's, I'll take it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, with the lyrics as well, you kind of have this, you don't really go flat out political. And I know with the way things are at the moment, everyone's got an opinion on everything. But what I like about these lyrics, what I've always liked about them, really, is that they're more philosophical than political. And what could apply to something that's happening today, it could work. It could be about something that happened 20 years ago, or going forward.
Absolutely.
It could be. And that's what I like about them as well. You keep it perfectly vague, I think, is the... Yeah, perfectly vague.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm glad you said that. You're spot on with that. I mean, you know, and history is very cyclical, you know, so a lot of stuff that's happening today we've seen happen in the past multiple times. So it's nothing new, and that's kind of the point. I mean, it is kind of like just our very cynical take on the world today, you know, and I mean, we do go into very real, very dark subjects, but again, we try not to take a political position, because we're not a political band. I can't stand politics. But unfortunately, politics is one of those many dividing forces in our world today. So it kind of has to be there. But, you know, again, it is written ambiguous to the extent that we're not taking the listener by the hand and saying, hey, this is what this song's about, this is what that song's about. You know, there is kind of vague enough that the listener could kind of extract what they wish from the lyrics, you know. But, you know, even though they're very specific when we write them, of course, topically, they're, each one of those songs means something very specific to us and is about something very specific that's going on in our world today. But you're right. I mean, they're just vague enough, just ambiguous enough that, you know, they could be applied to different scenarios, whether it be something right now or something in our past or something that could be coming down the pike in the future, you know. So, and I think the fans really get it, you know, and I think the biggest challenge lyrically with this record was just trying to articulate some of these ideas, you know, because I had a lot of these ideas before we went in the studio. And then I sat down with Bob and I explained to him, hey, you know, this song, Fostering the Divide, this song I want to be about this. This is what I'm feeling for this. This is the point I kind of want to get across. And then he'll sit down and he'll throw in his 2 cents and I throw in my 2 cents. And we kind of, you know, work together until we get it nailed down perfectly, you know. And that was the process for all of these songs, you know. And, you know, each one had its own challenges. Some of them came quicker than others, you know what I'm saying? Atonement came pretty quick. That was a song about religious extremism. And, you know, there's so much, you know, so much inspiration for that, you know, presently, in the past, and I'm sure going forward, you know, there'll be a lot of that happening. As long as you have, you know, that extreme mindset in any aspect of life, you're going to have extreme scenarios. So whether it's religion or not, but that's just a fact. So, between that and, you know, for like I said, Fostering the Divide, and a song like, The Distorting Light, which is about how our perceptions of our reality are kind of misdirected and changed, you know, by the media and by, you know, the way things are perceived and presented to us. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of things that are very real and are very dark, but are just kind of under the radar for a lot of people, you know. So if it could strike a nerve and kind of, you know, maybe open someone's eyes and to maybe explore these ideas more, that's great, you know. But at the end of the day, yeah, we try to kind of, you know, tread lightly. I never want to cross into that political realm. I never want to be preachy about anything. It's simply just us presenting our very, you know, cynical ideas and views of the world, basically. And I think a lot of people get it, which is good.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got a new member of the band as well, Alex. How do you pronounce his surname? I'm reading it. I can read it fine.
Alex Books.
So he was in Incantation.
Yeah, he's actually been in a few bands. He started out with Goraphobia was his first band, and he wrote all of the killer classic Goraphobia stuff back in the late 80s. So Alex has been around for a long time, and he's been a really close friend of ours forever. He came on our first U.S. tour with us in 1992. So he's not like a guy that just kind of popped out of nowhere. I mean, he's someone who's kind of been interwoven throughout our career and our history for the last 30 years. And he's been a very close friend and a huge fan of what we do. And he's a phenomenal guitar player. He played with, again, Goraphobia. He played with Incantation. He's toured with Master. So he's toured with, like, you know, and played with some of the most legendary bands, I think, out there. And he also has his own band called Ruinous, which is...
I listened to that album sort of late last year. I remember reviewing that. That's what I was going to say as well. Yeah, Ruinous.
Great album, right? Really good album. So he, you know, it was just, he was really the first and only choice. So we were kind of...
He fit right in, yeah.
Yeah, and he did. I mean, he really killed it on this tour. This was his first tour with us when we went out with the Return to Roots tour. And yeah, he killed it every night, man. He really, it's like he was always meant to be there. You know, like he was always in the band. It was one of those kind of transitions. And we were just so happy that that went so smoothly, dude. You don't know.
So how was the tour with Max and I got there in Roots? How did that go down?
It was fucking amazing, dude. I mean, really, it was for us, it was like a dream tour. I mean, we reached so many new fans on this tour, made a lot of new fans. The crowds were just packed every night. Even on Monday nights and Sunday nights and Tuesday nights, we had full houses. So it was a great tour as far as that goes. We had, you know, there was three amazing bands. I mean, Full Hell was the first band up out of Maryland, and they were, you know, younger guys, are all in their 20s, but man, just pro as hell, really got great heads on their shoulders and just phenomenal band, just a really dark, explosive band live, man. I mean, really cool. They added such a cool element to the package. And then, you know, we went up and we did our thing, and then Max and Igor came out and they did the entire Roots album. And then they did some other stuff, which was really cool because, you know, Return to Roots had two meanings. I mean, you know, it was, you know, they were obviously playing the entire Roots album, but it also was a return to the metal roots, you know, honoring those bands that kind of inspired all of us back in the 80s, you know. So they'd go out there and they'd do some covers. They do like Motorhead cover of Ace of Spades. We did a black metal cover from Venom, and, you know, me and the singer from Full of Hell Dylan and Max would get up there and we'd sing black metal together every night. So it was really cool, man. It was fun. Probably one of the highlights for me. They also had a drum interlude where they had our drummer Steve and Full of Hell's drummer Dave and Max and Igor. And all four of those guys would just be beating on the toms, you know, for like a tribal, like a 10-minute tribal thing. It was just awesome, man. It was very very cool the way they kind of got all the bands to kind of participate and do something really fun and unique. And, you know, for me personally and for Bob, I mean, Sepultura were a huge inspiration on Immolation back in the late 80s. I mean, that was one of the bands that when we first heard, we were like, wow, this is what we want to do. This is just extreme and barbaric and heavy and insane. And to actually tour with these guys and to kind of, you know, get to know them on a different level and to see that they're genuine guys. I mean, you know, they're really still into the music. I mean, they handpicked the bands for the tour. And they're really still huge fans. And, you know, they still have that passion in them. And it was no egos, man. It was like really refreshing for us to kind of meet these guys who were kind of like idols to us, you know, in the earlier years, you know, and to meet them and to see that they are just genuine cool people, man. And man, that means so much to me at this point in the game, you know. So it was a great tour on so many levels, really, for us.
Yeah, I mean, I interviewed Max a couple of years ago. I ended up interviewing him twice in the space of a week, one for his magazine and one was for the podcast. And I've been listening to him since I was at school, and I didn't feel like that at all. I was just chatting to him about Iron Maiden towards the end. It became a conversation.
Yeah. And it's great. I mean, they're still like into the music. I mean, you know, when he mentioned to me about doing the black metal, I was like, yeah, I was like, Venom. I fucking love Venom back in the day. So I hand painted black metal on my denim jacket when I was like 16. So, you know, I was like a huge Venom fan. So when he said that, I'm like, wow, what a cool idea. And then, you know, every night when we go up on that stage, you know, you could see he had that little glint in his eye, you know, like a little kid, like he was like, he couldn't wait to get out there and just tear it up, you know. And man, it was so cool to see, man, you know, for me especially, you know what I'm saying, to see that they were still as excited about doing this and having fun with every night. And that's it's nice to see at this point in the game. Like I said, really,
people forget as well how important I think those first 4-5 Sepultura albums were. It's like people it's like young people now who see Mike Tyson as like a celebrity. They forget those first 10 years of fighting.
Yeah.
You know, that they people kind of forget that 22-year-old animal that was in the ring.
Oh, you know? Absolutely. Absolutely.
And,
I mean,
that's how I feel about early Sepultura. People kind of need to reassess those albums a bit and realize just how good those albums were.
Oh, absolutely, man. And, you know, like I said, I mean, we used to cover Morbid Visions back in 88 when we didn't have enough original songs, you know, but that was one of the songs we covered, you know. I mean, just savage stuff back then. And you know, you remember now, at that time, there really wasn't anything like that out there. You know, you had like, you know,
no,
you had Slayer.
The scene, were they? They weren't part of the American scene at all, so they didn't have no contacts. They must have came completely out of nowhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, and they were doing it since like 84, 85 when they were just kids, you know. So, you know, when you would write a letter, like we actually wrote to them back in like 88, you know, our old drummer Neil wrote to them and we got a letter back from them. And man, that was a big deal because there was no exposure to these guys, like you said over here, because they were just a Brazilian band and they were a Brazilian phenomena until they finally signed with like Roadrunner and they broke out over here with Beneath the Remains. But those, like the EP and Morbid Visions and Schizophrenia, were kind of under the radar for a lot of people over here, you know.
Mm. Yeah, man. It's crazy. I think where they came from as well. You hear about these hip hoppers saying they're from the ghetto and they're from the where they came from. Fuck, you know, they total rag to riches story.
Oh no, that was hard. Yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, that's fucking, you know, down there, man. I mean, it's no joke. I mean, we went down there and we saw it firsthand. I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, you got to be careful down there. It's not like. You know, they definitely had, I'm sure, a lot of challenges, you know, coming up and, you know, making it happen. So to see them kind of break through and to, you know, kind of make a success out of it is really inspiring, man. I think for anybody who takes music seriously and who's in it for the right reasons, not the wrong reasons, you know.
I'm going to start wrapping up, man. So I'm going to go to some quick questions to finish off because we're going to be running out of
time. Sure.
Would it ever be a possibility if you ever did a split EP with Incantation?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't see why it would be an impossibility. The problem with us is that we just never have extra material. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, when we write for a record, you know, we write 10 songs, 11 songs, whatever, but that's it. Have any extras that we don't use. So that's always the challenge. You know, the biggest challenge for us in more recent times was doing the Scion EP, the Providence EP, because we had to write like 5 songs for that within like a 2-month period of time. And that was real challenging. So yeah, it's not that it would never happen. It's just that it's very difficult for us, you know, especially when we're not in that mode, you know.
No, because that was a question a friend requested, because we was well, I've been writing reviews and been doing interviews and stuff since 2012, and Incantation and Immolation in the last year or two keep coming up, the influence is there, and it's becoming a bit of an argument in the metal community. Who's the better New York band, Incantation or Immolation? It goes back and forth and back and forth, and everyone says, wouldn't it be good if they did a split EP?
Well, here's a deal. The question is flawed because they're not from New York. So that's an easy way to determine that. No, they're from Jersey. So so there you go. So
yeah, they're not New Yorkers.
They're the kings of Jersey, and you know, we could take the New York crown. So how's that? We don't have to disappoint anybody.
That's London and Essex. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Listen, we knew John when he was in Revenant. We played our first show with Revenant in 88. And, you know, we were always supportive of John when he decided he wanted to, you know, branch off and do Incantation. And I thought Incantation was the right move for him because it was darker, it was extreme, it was heavy. And I love Incantation. I mean, they're really, I consider them close friends. I mean, Kyle and John have been constant in that band for years and years and years, you know. So, I mean, they're great friends of ours. I mean, close friends. I mean, we've supported each other for years. And we actually did that Brazil trip I was just talking about together. So it's cool. So, yeah, I mean, you know, absolutely. I mean, we love those guys. I mean, you know, and they're from like our time. You know, they started kind of like right after we did. So, yeah, I mean, it's cool, you know, to have guys that, you know, you've known for 30 years who are still strong and still doing it and still relevant. So it's awesome.
The artwork on the first 3 albums is kind of linked. Was there a bit more bigger story to it? Was there something going on in the lyrics as well, or?
No, actually, there wasn't an intentional link. So sorry to sorry to,
because you got the angels and the demons, then you got the demons on the second one with the
sure,
and then Failure of the Gods. The doorway is in the background.
Yeah. See, each one of those we had a different concept for. We used Andreas Marshall, of course, for all 3 of them. So I think that was the main link between them, was that, you know, his interpretation of some of those ideas kind of was similar, in regard to like the demon and the angels and the look of all of those on all 3 of those pieces. But each one was a completely different concept, completely separate. But yeah, I agree. They do look like they have some sort of continuity between the 3 of them. I'll agree, definitely. Even though it's not intentional, so, you know, not to burst any bubbles, but yeah, it wasn't intentional. It was just the way the look and feel of them came out, you know. So, yeah, that's the story on that.
What upcoming tours have you got? You're coming to the UK with Vader. I know that much. What else is there?
Yes. We're psyched for that. Right after that tour, we do the Decibel Beer and Metal Fest, which is the first of its kind here in the U.S., as far as I know. And I think it's going to be fucking amazing 2-day event. So we do that. And now we're just planning on, filling in the rest of the year, you know, because we really want to do as much as we can for Atonement, especially here, because we didn't do a lot in the U.S. for Kingdom. We only did the Decibel tour and some sporadic stuff, so...
So you're striking while the iron's hot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it seems to be a good time for it because there is a lot of talk about the record, a lot of positive coming out of the press. So, you know, we'll take it and we'll do as much as we can to kind of perpetuate that as long as we can, you know. The fans want to see us. They want to see us, you know, play longer and play more. So, you know, so we'll continue to try to get out there as much as we can here. So, and in Europe. I mean, Europe's easier for us. This is the album to do it. So, yes.
Awesome. And can I have your top five albums?
Of all time?
Yeah, be it death metal or not, doesn't matter. Your top five albums.
Oh, man. These are always the craziest questions to me because it's so hard to think of top five albums. Let's see. I'm definitely going to throw some Zeppelin in there, you know, whether it's Zeppelin 1 or 2 or 4 or Zeppelin is just one of my favorites is in the classic rock genre. So I could pick, you know, 5 Zeppelin records and we could call it a day right there. So Black Sabbath is another one. I think any best of list for me has to have Sabbath, whether it's Masters of Reality or Volume 4. Or Paranoid, the first record, you know, those four. Even Sabotage. I like Sabotage. I mean, they're all killer. If we're going Dio era, Mob Rules, hands down for me. So those two bands would probably take up the first two spots. Then let's see. I would have to throw Maiden in there, because Maiden was one of those bands that kind of got me into playing bass. Steve Harris was the guy who got me into playing bass, hands down. And Maiden was one of those bands that I just latched onto earlier on, 13, 14 years old. So as far as which album, I don't know. I'll pick Peace of Mind or Power Slave. Even though I love everything up until, you know, probably, let's see, After Somewhere in Time. What was that one? After Somewhere in Time with the blue cover. I can't remember. But anyway. Seventh Son. Everything up to Seventh Son was like, you know, I enjoyed all of that stuff. So, but I'll pick Peace of Mind just because that was a special album for me. So that would be my first three spots. Let's see. Let's get something more heavier for the fourth spot. I don't know. It's a hard one, man. I think one album I listened to like over and over and over without letting up was probably Possess Seven Churches when that first came out.
Yeah,
so,
sure. Yeah, that's a lot of people forget about that album.
Oh, that was, to me, that album pretty much defined death metal at the time. That was the album that I was like, wow, this is how it's done. You know what I'm saying? It was like not thrashy, or it was just everything that I wanted music to be at the time. So, yeah, I would say Seven Churches. And then let me see. Good question for the last one. I'm going to go something totally non-metal. I think I'm going to go Lorena McKennitt and Ancient Muse for the fifth album, because that's my chill album. Nice, chill, relaxing Celtic album. So those are my choices. Those are my five.
Cool. Yeah, that's on a bit of a curveball as well. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah. Totally. Oh, it's great. It's great. She's a Canadian artist, and she's been around for years and years, and she does, you know, very heavily Celtic-themed stuff. But Ancient Muse has a lot of, Middle Eastern kind of vibe to it. Very cool. Really cool stuff. She's got an amazing voice, and it's just very well played. And I seen her live about 10 years ago at Radio City, and she just destroyed, man. Just killed it.
That's a quick one, just before you go, because I forgot to ask you. You and Rob also play in a Karen Chris's Gospel of the Witches.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that before you go.
Oh, that's probably, you know, I love that record. I should throw that album on the list, you know, because that Salem's Wounds record was the first record we did. And
oh, you was on,
man,
the record too, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I did just backing vocals on the record, all the heavier vocals, and Bob and I played Bob played guitar and I played bass and did the heavy vocals live. We did 4 live shows for that record. Unfortunately, we would have loved to have done a lot more. But, since it was, a new band and it was our first time out, it was just very hard to kind of, get touring and stuff at that time. But we're still excited about it. We hope Karen and her husband Davide decide to move forward and to continue with that, because I think it's something that shouldn't be, you know, put away. I think it's something that has a lot of potential. It's very dark, and musically I think it's just wonderful, man. It's just beautiful in such a dark way, and it was so fun for us. They were such amazing people to work with and to create music with and to perform with. I mean, it was such an awesome experience for us. I can't stress how cool it was for us to kind of step out of what we do into something completely different, but still something that was very dark and had a lot of feeling, you know. And that album kind of represented all of that for me, man. And it was such an amazing record. Yeah, I'd have to put that on my that would be number six on my top faves.
I'm gonna check that one out as well. Yeah, I'm gonna have a look on that, see what if I can get hold of it. All right, man, thanks. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Last Immolation, one of my favorite bands, so I'm totally stoked to have had this talk with you. And
awesome, man. Thank you so much, man. I had a great time, great questions. It was really cool, man. Thank you.
So that was Joe's Immolation interview, and I haven't edited said interview, and I listened to the album a fair bit because we get sent it. Good interview, man. I really enjoyed it. Very enjoyable. So we've got a few other interviews lined up. We have our fingers in several pies at the moment. We are really busy with work, and I've got like hospital things happening in the next couple of weeks. So I'm going to be away for a couple of weeks. So the show's going to be literally put on hold. So we're trying to do as much as we can before then. So it's going to get a little bit busier for us, and then we're going to go quiet for a bit. So stick with us. If you want to send us some music, you can. I'm thinking about doing a unsigned music special where we just have unsigned music sent in, because I've got a backlog of music that we need to get out there. So get in touch with us at Rock Show Online on Twitter or rockshow.rocks. I'm sure Joe's got some stuff he wants to write up and put on the site in the near future too.
Yeah, we've got a... an interview on the site at the moment with Vladimir from 80s thrash band The Mist. They've just re-released the debut album Phantasmagoria, which is a great album. I suggest you have a look. In the next couple of days, there's going to be a personal top 10 death metal albums of mine, and I think there's a few not rarities, but a couple of curveballs in there that I think there's a few in there that people may have missed. So I think that might be worth a read, or I think it might be. So listen to me. Yeah, it's worth a read. I wrote it. It's great. And next
read
episode. Next episode.
Fucking read it.
We've got interviews with Craven Idol and Warfather. And we're going to have Tristan Pratt, the metalist, on. He's going to co-host the next episode. And we're going to be reviewing... He's going to be doing the news with us and everything. And we're going to be reviewing Mastodon's new album, Emperor of Sand, which I bought this morning. And also, in our next episode, when we're going to do a review, we're going to be doing Testament's Low. So that's two things coming up. And in a couple of hours, I've got to go pick my boy up from school. And then I'm going to do a 15-hour shift tonight. Fuck my life. And
okay,
I think that's it.
Well, I think that's it. With that in mind, thanks very much for listening, and we will see you again soon.
Take care, guys.